before I begin, I'm going to get centered. I was taught by a wonderful spiritual lady, my mother, to always center myself, because centering allows me to go to that space within myself to provide you from my heart the message that God is going to send through me. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Show me thy ways, O Lord, and teach me thy paths, and lead me in thy truth, and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And for this I say, thank you, God. And so it is. Amen. The title of my talk is, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Confusion? Take that back. Take that back. Chaos or community? All right. Y'all, I was warned about this group now. I'm going to start again. We're going to rewind that. Cut. Rewind that back. Okay. The title of my talk is, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? Now, I want to say that was written by Dr. King. Have anyone read that book? How many? Okay, now I got you where I want you. Okay, I'm going to share some things. I'm going to talk about it because I'm going to share that because this begins today is a season for nonviolence. In honor of Dr. Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi, along with Nelson Mandela. Because a couple of weeks ago, as you know, was Martin Luther King's birthday. So I'm going to begin there. But I take you back to why Dr. King wrote the book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? In 1967, 50 years ago, it was a very traumatic period in America. And as you know, Dr. King was going through a lot of challenges in 1967. America was in a place of chaos and challenges, and the entire civil rights movement. But those of you who may remember the challenges that Dr. King was going through, if you drift back to 1967, for those of us who can go back to that time period, we didn't know what was going to take place. America was going through a period of, for many of us, in 67, let's see, I was about 15 years old. I had a fro that went about out here. I was wearing bell bottoms and, I got my girlfriend gave me my first car. Her daddy did. I was wild. But it was, it was a time period where everything was going fast. And I know out here in California, y'all was setting the pace. On a social end, the riots and watts had already taken place in 65. People were becoming, they were sort of disturbing because the civil rights movement was now shifting gears. We was no longer concerned, but we was questioning whether or not nonviolence was actually going to be a working, effective principle or policy. And people were beginning to drift away from Dr. King's effort. Dr. King was trying to hold on entirely to whether or not nonviolence, the effort or the movement was actually going to be viable. His own members of his own community were starting to wonder whether or not, and those of us who were young, we could no longer say whether or not we wanted to stand with Dr. King. In my generation, we had questioned whether or not we should. Those of us who were young in 17 and 18, living in Detroit, we were starting to turn our back on that because it was crazy. The police, we had something in Detroit called the Big Four. That's where police were coming down on us hard. It was difficult to remain in this idea of nonviolence when the police was very radical and very difficult, cracking our heads over back and forth. And I'm not sure what was going on in Oakland. I'm not sure what was going on in LA, but I can tell you about Detroit and I can tell you about Chicago. But it was challenging. So we were having a hard time to listen to what Dr. King was saying. I'm not sure you were hearing what's going on in Detroit, because in 1967, there was a riot that took place in Detroit. I remember that exactly. I know what took place in Chicago. It was challenging. So for Dr. King, I was a member of SCLC, but before then, I was a member of the Black Panther Party. I was a member of what was going on. I was a part of that radical shift that was taking place. And I was very concerned about whether or not Dr. King's words were effective. And so for Dr. King, though, I worked with his brother, Dr. Claude Young. Dr. Claude Young was a doctor in Detroit. I later became a part of SCLC movement, so a lot of this stuff becomes very factual to me. At the time of Dr. King's involvement, he was having a very heavy heart in 1967. Dr. King he was being pulled from all sides. Those of us who were young were pulling at Dr. King. Stokely Carmichael, H. Rapp Brown, others who were part of SNCC and Students for Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and others began to shout for the first time, challenging him whether or not he should continue with his efforts. He had individuals who were part of CORE and other organizations began to challenge him. And then Dr. King did something that people, where his white support was, began to criticize him even more because he went against the Vietnam War. In 1967, Dr. King in Wisconsin, in the University of Wisconsin, stood out directly against the war in Vietnam. Oh my Lord, why did Dr. King do that? Seriously, because prior to that, Dr. King had the support of a lot of groups and a lot of individuals who were still contributing money to his organization, trying to support the nonviolent movement. When Dr. King did that, they pulled away. Now Dr. King had very little support, and people were even going after him even more. J. Edgar Hoover was even attacking him harder than before. He did one other thing that turned people against him. He started addressing the issue against the plight of the poor. He realized that it wasn't about racial issues. He recognized it was about economical issues. He realized that when you have poor people in America, how can you stand out and fight a war in Vietnam when the issues of poverty was facing all people regardless of color and race? He starts seeing those issues, and he can no longer stand not saying anything about the issues of poverty. So if you remember, he began to fight an issue when he went to Memphis where he stands, I am a man. He's no longer talking about civil rights. It became an issue about poverty. Dr. King, in June of 1967, he decided to go to Jamaica because he's being attacked by his own community. He's being attacked by the government. He's being sought after with the FBI and others trying to discredit him. Him and his wife, they said he just had to get away. He's having death threats that's coming at him from all directions. So he finally go to a place in Ocho Rios, Jamaica. How many have been to Ocho Rios, Jamaica? Beautiful place, right? So he went to a place that had no telephone. He rented a house, him and Claretta. And when he was there, he wrote this book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? This book that he wrote came from his heart, and it was about what he felt was actually his last book he ever wrote. It was a book that he was trying to express to the world, a challenging thought that was something he felt needed to be said. Because when he looked out at the world, that question 50 years ago is still a question that we're dealing with even today. Where do we go from here? Is it chaos or community? And we can look at it from several levels. When Dr. King wrote that book in 1967, he wrote it not knowing the impact it would have on the world 50 years later. That August of 1967, before a convention of SCLC, he delivered that speech before the body of his ministerial colleagues who were part of Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and they heard him give that speech. And there in that speech, he talked about the divine dissatisfaction with America. He said, I'm there's a divine dissatisfaction with the way we're going in America today. And if you recall, in 67, there was a presidential election that took place. Do you remember who was elected in 68? But there was a runoff going on. Who was elected in 68? Richard who? So America was divided again. America was divided 50 years later too. America was divided because you had Hubert Humphrey running against Richard Nixon. And in 68, America was divided. We were divided between Vietnam and ISIS. Today, we're still divided. We had another presidential election that divided us. Then we had a presidential election that divided us now. In that speech that Dr. King gave, when he talked about a divine dissatisfaction, he said, if I had to choose one thing, let us choose love. And in his book, that final solution, he says that we should choose love as our solution to it all. It was very powerful because he saw the divide that was coming to all of us. And I'm not sure if he was projecting out 50 years later, because in a matter of months that was going to follow him, in a matter of months, because that April, as you know, he was called to Memphis. He didn't want to go to Memphis, I tell you now, because he's weary, very weary. He didn't want to go down there, but they said, well, you have to attend this march in Memphis, a poor people's march, a campaign against poverty. And Abernathy and others said, you need to be here at this march. And even on that April the 3rd, when he was to give that I've been to the mountaintop dream speech, that great speech, you know, he had a flashback moment. And I'm just going to take a minute or two to tell you about that flashback moment. He gave that speech unprepared, because the night before the speech, he sat down on April the 3rd and says, I'm too tired to give a speech. They got him out of his bedside and says, we need for you to go to this hall. It was a Masonic hall to deliver this speech. They were already in the hall, these people, thousands of people wanting you to hear you. They didn't want to hear Ralph Abernathy. They didn't want to hear nobody else. So he got up and went and gave this speech, I've been to the mountaintop. And in that speech, he recalls, for those who were there, something significant. In the last part of that speech, he spoke. He had a flashback. His life flashed in front of him, where he went back 10 years in his life. And during that time period, he flashed back to 1958. There was a lady, and this lady was named Isola Curry. Have you ever heard her name before? Few of you have, but those who didn't, I'm going to tell you who she was. In 1958, Dr. King was in Harlem. He was signing some books, and she walked up to him and she said, are you Dr. King? And he said, yes, I am. And she pulled out a letter opener and stabbed him in the chest. Dr. King couldn't pull it out because it was right by an artery. And as they were performing a surgery, they said, if you had a sneeze, you would have bled to death in 1958. And he thought about that moment. And as he gave the speech, I've been to the mountaintop, he brought it back out. And in that speech, he said, if I'm so happy I didn't sneeze, because I would have never had a chance to see changes in America. In that same speech, and that's why he said, I've been to the mountaintop, because he had a chance to see what it was like. Because God changed them enough or saved his life. So often we never know when we're at a crossroad of a decision, because he had been there. You see, we're always at a point of a crossroad in our life, just as we are now. Where do we go from here? Our country is at a crossroad. Where do we go from here? We feel a divine dissatisfaction. Are we strong enough to choose love? Are we strong enough to rally together, to be uplifted? Are we strong enough to make a decision about building a spiritual community? Are we strong enough to make a decision about being uplifted, to build a community of spiritual people where another generation don't have to come back and repeat these same questions again? We have to look at the fact that 50 years later, we're still dealing with the same question that Dr. King said in 1967. Where do we go from here? Chaos or community? Aren't we tired of revisiting these things? Look at the parallels that's still there before us. We're still talking about a community of dissatisfaction. We've yet to have a community where we see love. But I will say there are some great things. Our youth don't see racism the way we see it. We need to applaud that. We need to applaud the fact that they're closer together than we ever was. We need to applaud the fact that they are the ones who are still going around saying all life matters. They are the ones who are still rallying around the idea that we can be lifted up. We need to applaud the fact that they are the ones holding on hope for a greater world today. And we need to not pass that by or not see that. Sometimes we should be grateful that it has been the youth that's been carrying us forward and rallying that on. I echo the words again of Emily Cady, liberty or bondage. I know I can't speak all day, so I'm not going to try to speak all day. No, that's serious. You know, I get wound up. Yeah, gotta understand me. But I want you to understand that you have a great opportunity, and it's a reason that right here at Walnut Creek that you've been selected by Unity to host Unity Worldwide Mid-Year Conference. You have to ask yourself, where do we go from here? You have to make a decision about what you're going to do in the future, because the entire Unity movement is being challenged, and about our own growth. We have to rebuild, renew, and restore. And it's not about, let me jump off here, the camera can't follow me right now, I'm going way back down here. It's not about who's up there. Hear me out, it's for a reason I did that. It's about who's out there. It's about who's in the seat, because you are Unity of Walnut Creek. You are the spirit of Unity of Walnut Creek. This role may change continuously, but those of you who have been here, you are the heart and soul and the spirit of this ministry. Each of you got to bind together to make sure that you understand the mission and vision of this ministry. You have to pull together to make it work, to make it viable. We are transient, temporal, but the spirit of what takes place here has to always go on. But you got to know, where do you go from here? You got to know what your mission and vision is. You got to inspire people to come in. You have to have something so great that you see beyond these walls. You have to see beyond just this segment. You can't be a club. I got off script, I know that, y'all, but listen. Hear me out. It's more than just about you. It's about a movement that creates something great. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's about creating something that will last another 50 years and go beyond you and me. It's about a movement that changed the lives of people. Because this is about something greater than all of us. It's about creating something that is spiritually divine, spiritually motivating, spiritually inspiring. This is what God wanted us to create so that we can create heaven on earth right here for all of us, for all people. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just getting wound up, so y'all gotta forgive me. There's something called, during this season for nonviolence, called Principles of Spiritual Activism. Would you go to that slide, please? And it's 16 slides we'll go through. The first one says, when we move through the season of nonviolence, remember this. It talks about if we really want to create a more compassionate, loving world, we first need to become more loving and compassionate ourselves. We need a new vision of a society governed by love. You agree to that? Where compassion is the high standard. Conflict between individual groups and nations is steeped in misunderstandings already in distrust. Just look around you. Negative, fearful, angry thoughts fuel rhetoric from opposing sides that invariably leads to alienation. Nothing short of conscious communication producing sincere interaction will aid us in resolving our differences. Until our leaders understand this, and I do mean that, there will be no lasting peace in the world. How can we as spiritual activists help to improve this picture? The following principles and practices are a work in progress, and we truly welcome your comments. That's coming from Asian Association of New Thought. First, love those with whom we are in conflict. You got to do that. Two, we are spiritual beings. See the image in God in everyone. In who?
Everyone.
That's right. Three, we are all connected and a part of the web of life. There's no one who is not connected. Three, we can pray. Prayer is a powerful and effective and should precede all action. If you don't understand the power of prayer, we need a class right around that. And hear me out. I say that loud. Five, we are conscious being and a part of a collective universal consciousness. You have 72 trillion cells within you. And that's just a measure that they can't really touch you. But you're connected to a divine web of consciousness that goes well beyond you. Each one of you are connected to over a million people and you don't even know it. Each one of you are connected to a continuous flow of energy. Six, shift our motivation for action from anger to love. If you're motivated by anger, you're already on a dead end track going down. You got to shift that to love. Seven, be aware of any negative thinking on your part or our part. Eight, be willing to talk openly about love. You hear me?
Yes.
Nine, to promote peace, we need to become peaceful ourselves. Remember in the Beatitude, we have to remember that. Blessed are the peacemakers. 10, develop a non-attachment to outcome. Do I have to go into that? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. 11, let go of the need to be right and in control. Okay. Y'all got that? Okay. Those two are very critical, isn't it? How much tension? You know there's a lot of tension in those two alone. Because I know at your 9:30 class, I felt the vibration almost threw me over here. I said, whoa. It was like I stepped into something. Okay. 12, when involved in a dispute, focus on the issue rather than attacking the opposition. 13, we should not isolate ourselves from the pain and suffering of the world. 14, God created life, and we are intelligent beings capable of creative genius. 15, peaceful, nonviolent, direct action is an appropriate way to demonstrate our protest to harmful, unjust laws or practices. 16, we are all one with God, each other, and all life. My brothers and sisters, we are here for a divine purpose in life. God called us here as a divine part of the overall mission of life. There's not one person in this room that God did not touch or anoint. There's not one person here that select to be a part of this mission we call life. We have stood back too long waiting for someone else to do what we've been called to do. Your destiny, your divinity, your awareness simply means that it's time for each of us to step into what God has called us to be. We've waited for others to do it. It's not your president that matters. It's not even the minister. What matters is you. You have to say to yourself, it is mine to do, mine to be involved in, mine to create. You are Walnut Creek. God bless you.